following has been pre-recorded for your listening and dancing pleasure.
This Doug and Danny podcast brought to you by Cunningham's Journal. Cunningham's Journal, the only bar you need to know in Kearney.
This is Central Nebraska's most listened to all sports radio station.
We always parade winners around here.
From 1460 KXPN and 1550 KICS, you're listening to Central Nebraska's ESPN Radio Superstation.
For any of you who have listened in the past, you know that I am not a radio-trained personality, so we are just going by the seat of our pants.
It's time for the Tri-Cities' number one sports show. You're listening to the Doug and Daddy Show.
Victoria and Zaretska, you know, these Russians, they need to buy a vowel. Let me just say that. They need to buy a vowel with that first name.
Now coming to you live from the Midway Auto Dealership broadcast booth. Need a vehicle? Think Midway.com.
No. I don't think that. It's minor. It's just a minor sin. It's a minor one. Well, I'm coming to you then for some of the major ones.
It's time for the Doug and Daddy Show.
And good morning, everyone. Welcome to the Doug and Daddy Show on Central Nebraska's ESPN Radio Superstation. Doug Duda, Jim Langan with you on this Monday. Glad to have you along with us. Damon Benning, former MVP for the Huskers, and, of course, co-host of Sharp and Benning in the Morning, will join us in our next segment. Also, Matt Schick, if he can get out of his meetings. End of the program today. Talk about all of the confusion, all the top 20 teams that were beaten over the weekend. Every year you get a weekend like that, and first one of the year was this weekend. We're sitting here after Nebraska's first loss of the season, and we'd love to hear from you. There's so many overreactions right after the game, so many ways now that you can kind of vent your thoughts, whether it's on radio programs, blogs, Twitters, emails, Snapchats, tweets, whatever you want to do. That's where you can vent to the Huskers today, though you've had a couple of days, day and a half now to think about it. Your thoughts, has anything changed? 888-455-ESPN, the Kearney Chicken Coop fan line, 888-455-3776. You can always tweet us at ESPN 1460 1550. And, of course, the Dent Popper inbox, Doug and Daddy at ESPNSuperstation.com. Good morning, Jimmy.
How you doing, Doug?
Well, you know, I hate to say I told you so. That's not the whole point of this. But I sit here on Monday, October the 6th, just like I thought I would on Monday, October the 6th, back in, March, April. And I almost think, and that's why I wanted Damon Benning on today, because very rarely do we get X and O guy on here. But Damon is one of those guys that's probably watched the game 10 more times, breaks things down. There was a lot of talk, and even Husker fans were going, man, they're bringing the linebackers. They're stopping our run game. We're not throwing it here. Why did we go into the wind in the first quarter? And there's a lot of things out there. You know, how did Tommy Armstrong miss some wide open guys? How that affects things a little bit later on in the game. I'm rewatching it this morning. It's on the Big Ten Network where they play it all back in 60 minutes, which was awesome because you just watch the plays. But where we set up that field goal, I mean, you can talk about all the missed opportunities in the first quarter, but we have to kick that field goal where Jordan Westerkamp is wide open. Wide open. He's throwing to Abdullah in the deep slant there in the end zone. It's incomplete. We kicked the field goal. But there were so many ifs in this game. If he hits Westerkamp, then it's 20-7. Then, conversely, Nebraska doesn't have to go for the two-point conversions twice. That's 6 points. How many did Nebraska lose the game by?
Doug, I'm going to say Michigan State punts the ball out of bounds. Instead of punting the ball downfield, Michigan State, if they're only up 6 points, they're not going to punt that ball to anybody. They're going to punt that thing out of bounds. I mean, so yep. Let's look at the other side of that and look at some of the things Michigan State did. Hit an upright, hit a crossbar. You know, they're just playing the second half not to lose. They're just kind of thinking, hey, whoa, let's just kind of hang on to this thing. It looks like we got this thing won unless we have a really stupid turnover. So they were playing really tight, and that happens sometimes in college football. You don't want to make that obvious turnover. So if we're really talking about who outplayed who in that game, I'm not going to listen to too much of this because Michigan State outplayed Nebraska. Nebraska got a lot of breaks and couldn't take advantage of them in the first quarter. Couldn't even move the ball. Could not. Abdullah did a tremendous job getting two rushing touchdowns. There was no place to go.
That's why I'm saying
a lot
of ifs, and your point is very well taken. A lot of ifs. Again, why did Nebraska go into the wind in the first quarter? With those breaks, those are probably, and again, these are ifs, probably three field goal attempts. Two of them very manageable. One of them, I think, would have been more than 50 yards. And then you get on Sam Foltz for, you know, trying to kick into this win. I mean, what do you have, an 11-yard net punt on one of them because it was a touchback? Because you can't kick 50-yard field goals into 25-mile-an-hour winds. But if it's at your back, maybe it's 9-0 Huskers at the end of the first quarter. That's why I'm saying there were so many ifs in this football game. And I guess my question to you is, do you feel the same, better, or worse about Nebraska football and the type of team they are this morning than you did on Friday?
Well, I think you have to look at it this way, that I've said from the get-go that the games on the road, Northwestern, Michigan State, Iowa, and Wisconsin are all going to be really hard games to win. Everything else on the table, I was looking at 8-4 and looking at them maybe stealing something. You know, but going on the road, there for a while, we looked like Northwestern maybe wasn't going to be very good. And that kind of changed. And we talked a little bit about that Northwestern-Wisconsin game, that was an intriguing matchup, that game being in Northwestern.
So I wish I'd have put that on the sheet because I got it right.
Yeah. You know, but what we're saying about that, when we look at things like that, I think playing on the road is a real, real key to this. And unfortunately, Nebraska, they're games that are a little tough are on the road. They probably could have gone to Illinois and won.
So you're saying the same. You think that you feel the same about Nebraska today as you did Friday?
No. I'll tell you what. In July, I felt we were going to go 8-4. Then all of a sudden, we looked like the body language and some of the things we were doing. I thought we looked pretty good against Illinois and played fairly decent against Miami. So I kind of fed into it a little bit that maybe this team would go 9-3, 10-2. But now I'm right back to the 8-4 deal. You know.
Let's go to John and Carney via the Dent Popper inbox. Well, it was a gallant effort with 40 seconds to go, but it looks like another 9-4 season and another mediocre season. Too many mistakes, a mere contained. I still like Pelini's attitude or change of it, but we are still an average team. Who have we played other than Michigan State? Okay, thanks, John. Appreciate that. I believe official prediction at the beginning of the year was 10-2. I still feel that we will not be worse than 10-2. So I disagree with you a little bit on the four losses. I disagree with John a little bit on the four losses. I believe that I'm just a little bit past middle on, I almost like Nebraska's team a little bit more today than I did on Friday. And there were many mistakes, there's no doubt about it. But, and if is the key word again. Clean up the mistakes. With everything that happened on the road, in the weather, with the mistakes, and Michigan State gave Nebraska opportunities, but they didn't score on any of them in that first quarter, all those turnovers. Nebraska lost by five, people. I don't care if it was three touchdowns in the fourth quarter. Nebraska, bottom line, lost by five. Michigan State's defense is the best in the conference. That didn't change. People didn't want to believe it going into the game. Zach Stirrup's not going to block Shalik Calhoun one-on-one on the edge. Nobody that wears a offensive lineman's jersey for Nebraska is going to be able to block Shalik Calhoun one-on-one on the edge. There weren't that many surprises except that Nebraska, who did throw it, and this was one of the best things I heard all weekend, if Tommy Armstrong throws it 42 times, Nebraska ain't winning the football game. And they're probably right about that. That's why we'll have a lot of questions for Damon Benny when he comes on here in the next segment. Let's go to Mark from the Dent Popper inbox. He says, Doug, lots of things from Saturday, good and bad. The best, the fight in the team, refusal to fold. the bad or worse, Armstrong is regressing. Teams will take eight out, and that makes, he's talking to Abdullah, of course, and make Armstrong beat them. From not hitting checkdowns to missing wide-open receivers to poor reads, he continues to struggle. The sophomore excuse is not valid. Lots of young players play the tight end position well. I assume that's what he means, tight end position well. The worst, Cotton falling down out of his stance. Even if the ball was snapped, he'd have gotten his back or receiver killed. It would be a good day when the Cottons are out of the program. Yes, if that had happened to anybody besides a Husker, we're all laughing at Jake Cotton falling down while Tommy Armstrong's making the read. And what's the deal with Armstrong and Pelini? And then they're yelling at each other. And I'm talking Mark Pelini, the center. You should not be having those problems because I don't think it was that loud at Michigan State where they weren't communicating right. But so be it. We'll talk more about that as the moment moves on. Armstrong is not regressing because, in my opinion, because I didn't have a ton of faith in him. That was the weakest spot, according for my thoughts, to start the season. But the weird thing is, Tommy can throw the medium to deep ball very well. Just the last drive, guys, he's right on the numbers. So don't give me that crap. That, you know, he's terrible, because he's not terrible. I didn't know if he was going to be good this year. But he does have problems, and he is a sophomore. And again, he is playing the best defense he's going to face all regular season long. So don't be overly harsh. Yeah, Tommy's got to get better. Jimmy, as I said this morning, if our offensive line was better and Tommy was a Heisman candidate, hell, we'd be playing for a national championship. They have issues. So I don't know why Husker fans should be shocked this morning.
Well, if the thing of it is okay, when we're talking, the trouble with saying that we're good on is basically how it's a good teams beat each other at the line of scrimmage and they outplay the other team when it's 11 on 11 and we're going on first down, second down, and third down. That's where the good teams find out who's outplaying who. Now, let's talk about fourth down plays. On fourth down, We really outplayed Michigan State. I mean, I thought we outplayed Michigan State on fourth down unbelievably. I mean, okay, we run a punt back for a touchdown. We return a punt back for a touchdown. We have a fourth down punt that Michigan State mishandles, and we end up recovering the ball. You know, so the turnovers went our way, and the fourth downs, the special teams actually went our way. You know what I mean, Doug? I mean, I thought the special teams really went our direction. And then we go into the wind and to start the game in the first quarter. Maybe you wanted to win the second quarter. I know a lot of teams that want to win the second and fourth quarter. Yeah. He kicks off, and guess what happens? Second play of the game, their Michigan State quarterback, who everybody's mad at ours. The quarterback always is going to get criticized. He throws a pass. He hits one of our linemen in the head. The ball bounces, and Gregory catches the ball. I don't know if that's a good play. I mean, what do you think? I mean, if Michigan State loses the game, guess who they're going to blame it on? Their quarterback.
Well, his numbers weren't very good. He just happened to hit a couple of deep balls.
That's exactly right.
Scott, via the Twitterverse, and this will be a question for Damon Benning as well, but again, he says, why in the world don't we sub on our offensive line? Stirrup was abused repeatedly. What is the worst that could have happened? You know, this is a response that goes back throughout the time of football. You as a coach would know this as well, Jimmy. They're not starting Zach Stirrup because he is third on the depth chart. All right? Those are the guys that they believe are the best to put out there and rotate in what they can. So we'll see what Damon has to say about that. John from Kearney says, quick question. If Nebraska wins out and a rematch with Michigan State of the Big Ten Championship takes place, it's always tough to beat a team twice in the same year. Your take. That's so far away. But I like the attitude of the team coming out saying we want to play them again. Right now, Nebraska has to hope Ohio State gets out of the picture because they're going to start warming up here. And if Ohio State beats Michigan State, then they're in that got to lose twice deal. And I would rather play Michigan State than Ohio State. I think that would be good. What do you think? People are going to be talking about that now, especially with the way the Nebraska schedule sets up bye week. If you beat Northwestern, Rutgers, don't give me Rutgers. They sold out and they beat Michigan. Not sold. Saves there. We get through this month and you can start talking about it a little more in earnest. But what do you think? If the teams play again, as you said, you've pointed out a few things that Michigan State could have been better at. I don't know if the ball could have things been worse Saturday. I guess that's where we're setting here. Could have Michigan State beaten Nebraska?
Oh.
Not by – and the score is – so let's say it's 27-3. From that point, could it have been worse than 27-3 going into the fourth quarter? I don't think so.
Maybe not. I don't know if you can get worse than three. I mean, you know, I mean, look to me, there was a time in that game, and I'm in a contest with 115 people, Doug, then we predict the score of the game. Mm-hmm. You predict the score of the game. 115 people predicting the score of the game. Of the 115 people in the contest, all of us, everybody involved, the lowest score they had Nebraska scoring was 20. Okay, I had it 31-20, Michigan mm-hmm. State. That's good because I'm trying to win the contest. Yeah. I mean, because I know a lot of people are going to take Nebraska, but I had it 31-20. Another guy had it 26-20. And I'm thinking, oh, my God, he's going to beat me. Because he's got 26-20. He's going to win this thing.
You wanted the field goal.
Well, I could have used it. But the thing, what I'm saying is...
So could all of those people that took Michigan State.
But what I'm saying is, honestly, what I wished I'd have picked, what I wished I was watching the game, would have been 30-7. Because that's what it looked like it was going to be to me. It looked like, hey, we were really going to have a lot of trouble scoring.
I just thought Nebraska finally figured it out.
Through the football.
Yeah.
They had to throw the ball.
Yeah, and they finally figured it out. It was a little too late.
And there was a tough Armstrong had a really nice pass there at the end of the game. We didn't catch it. The guy's knee might have been out of bounds, but we put it there where it gave us a chance to maybe make a great catch and win the football game. He also had a pass to Westerkamp where we dropped it, if you remember that. There was a play where he was pretty wide open, and he dropped that one. And there was a lot of – and that was a good call. We kind of had a couple good – we also had a call where we tried to go one-on-one with Abdullah coming out of the backfield. That was a good call. We almost had that thing did. So there were some things we tried, but unfortunately, you know, we had a caller come in, and I talked, you were gone that day, but I talked to the guy from Michigan State, and I just said this. I said, you know, the one thing everybody's counting on is Nebraska's going to be able to run the ball. And I said this. I said, if we cannot run the ball, this game could get ugly.
It was for a while.
And we could not run the football.
47 total yards on the ground. We'll take a break here in the Midway Auto Dealership broadcast booth. Damon Benning will join us when we come back.
Comforting guidance when you need it most.
Horner, Liske, McBride, and Kuehl. Dedicated, trusted, and compassionate service.
Horner, Liske, McBride, and Kuehl.
We listen to you. We are here for you.
And we help ease a difficult time.
Our family serving your family for generations. Please call, stop by, or go online. Horner, Liske, McBride, and Kuehl Funeral and Cremation Services.
Hi, this is Ron Wall with Cargill Ag Horizons Marketing Services, better known as CAMS. As a personal marketing manager, I bring Cargill's global knowledge to your home or office by delivering unique insights that can benefit your operation. When you work with CAMS, you have expert marketers working for you so that you can concentrate on the business of farming. To learn more about how our disciplined approach to risk management can benefit your operation, call me at 402-710-1200. Cargill, helping farmers prosper.
ESPN Radio Superstation 1460 and 1550 Weather Eye Weather is brought to you by Farm Bureau Insurance agents Rich Peters and Matt Myers on North 2nd Avenue in Kearney.
Health insurance is changing. You have new options, but which one is right for you? As authorized independent agents for Blue Cross and Blue Shield of Nebraska, Farm Bureau Financial Service agents Rich Peters and Matt Myers know health insurance and can help you understand your options and the differences between them. Contact Rich Peters and Matt Myers and see how they can simplify the process and help you select the right health insurance policy for you and your family. Blue Cross and Blue Shield of Nebraska is an independent licensee of the Blue Cross and Blue Shield Association. Securities and services offered through FBL Marketing Services, LLC, affiliate Farm Bureau Financial Services.
We'll see lingering cloud cover and some clearing development as we head further through the day today with a high of about 76. Winds out of the west-northwest, stay at about 10 to 20. Tonight, we'll head back to 49 for a low. I'm meteorologist Paul Frable. Right now, it's 57.
Doug and Daddy Show in the Midway Auto Dealership broadcast booth. Doug Duda, Jim Langan with you on this Monday. Midway Chevrolet, Buick, Cadillac, and Midway Chrysler, Dodge, Jeep, Ram, where you can join Midway in the fight against breast cancer in the month of October. When you test drive any Chevrolet vehicle in the month, they'll contribute another $10 towards the American Cancer Society's Making Strides Against Breast Cancer program. As we say, they always get you the best deal on a new or pre-owned vehicle with the hassle-free pricing, but they also take care of the community and the area, and this is just another way to do that. Join Midway in their fight against breast cancer. And don't forget, as they continue to expand their business, they have job openings like product specialists, customer service reps, and technicians. You can find out more, see the full list of jobs, and apply online at MidwayCareers.com. MidwayCareers.com. We'll get to Jimmy's selections and Pigskin Pick'em, and we did win. I don't know how, but we did win in Pigskin Pick'em against our caller on Friday, but it was not pretty. We're joined now by one of the hosts of Sharp and Betting in the Morning on 1620 in Omaha, and of course, former Husker and MVP Damon Benning joins us this morning. Damon, great to catch up with you. How are you?
I'm good. How are you guys? Well, you guys do it right, man. I'm excited you guys asked me on.
Well, hey, we appreciate the time, and I was telling Jimmy, I told the listeners, sometimes we just get on and talk big picture, but it seemed to me that you would be obviously a good X and O guy, player, coach. How many times have you watched the game since the original one?
I'm on about 3.5. I like to do it in phases. I'll take O-line, D-line, then I'll look at the skill guys, and then I do special teams. So that's kind of the coach in me, and it can be tedious, but I enjoy doing it.
How did the show this morning, and then, of course, I know you guys do a Big Red overreaction after the ball game. What is the Omaha metro area feeling on Nebraska today?
You know, I was a little surprised. It's probably 60-40 in terms of the level of disappointment. You know, there's that contingency that will tell you, hey, big stage, it's what we do. I didn't expect much. There's a small portion that feels like they let one get away, and then there's the portion, kind of the overwhelming majority, that thinks that Michigan State was just superior to Nebraska. So I imagine you guys are in a similar ratio, but for me, I got to tell you, I was a little bit surprised on the second and third rewatch where a lot of what went on, I felt, especially more than watching it the first time, had a lot more to do with Nebraska than it did Michigan State, which was not my consensus early on. Nebraska left a lot of plays on the field, especially early in that football game.
No doubt, and I said if is one of the words. There were so many ifs. And let's start with the very beginning. Damon, has there been an explanation? Because we were talking to some of the guys, and it didn't come up in the press conference, and I always hate those late-night games because I know the writers and the TV guys, they need their two or three quotes, and it's a short press conference. But why did Nebraska elect to go into the wind in the first quarter? Because had they had the wind at their back, those three chances could have been three field goals instead of three punts.
Yeah, that's a $64,000 question. I might have to ask that on my own today when I talk to those guys, only because I don't really have a good answer yet. I think everybody could tell the direction of the wind flow. We knew what happened with the coin toss, but inexplicably, it seemed to be some miscommunication on which goal Nebraska wanted to defend, because there in no situation can I imagine that Michigan State won the toss, deferred, and Nebraska elected to kick off. So that, and then in that vein, you would ask, okay, Michigan State, which goal would you like to defend? I can't imagine that being the scenario. So I think, obviously, I would assume that a mistake had to have been made. And unfortunately, with the scenario you just laid out, is a costly one.
Yeah, I was talking earlier. I thought the one disappointment to me was I felt like Nebraska really won the special teams, and maybe not so much. I mean, the punt return was the key, but all the other things that happened with the special teams, you know, Michigan State mishandling that punt into that win the one time. But the one play that really hurt us, though, when we just got the interception, did not move the ball at all, and I had no problem with this. We're about on the 33, 34-yard line, and we decided to punt. But, boy, when you punt from the 33 or 34-yard line, the world's worst thing you can do is put that thing 10 yards deep in the end zone. Your comments on that play?
Yeah, that's a game changer. And flip that around conversely, when Michigan State had the opportunity after Nebraska threw the interception, the Michigan State got the two first downs. What did their punter turn around and do? He had a chance right around midfield to pin Nebraska deep, and he flipped the field. So when you take a look at those little executions, especially for a guy like Foles, who I think has done an extremely good job kicking, boy, that you let, and it was kind of the theme of the night. They let one get away there, but when you consider how that first half was going, it almost seemed to typify how the night was going. It was disappointing, to say the least.
Talking with Damon Benning here on the Doug and Daddy Show, former Husker and host of Sharp and Benning in the Morning on 1620 in Omaha. This is the question that everybody is, it's not even a question, it's a comment. Everybody hates Nebraska's offensive line. They hated them at the beginning of the year, then they played better. Amir's running well. Michigan State did everything they could to stop them. We've had numerous questions. Why don't they sub out more? Of course, I say, Damon, it's not like we start the third string and then sub in the first string, but what are you seeing from the O-line? What's the
you know, I like that.
What's the problem? I flat out, Michigan State's defense better than our O line, but it was pretty evident on Saturday.
Well, I think it's twofold, and I'll talk about them in the same vein, but they're kind of mutually exclusive. First and foremost, Michigan State was able to do work with just their front four. So when you're able to do that and you play quarters like Michigan State does, which in essence allows you to play nine in the box because those safeties play in the run game, plus your front seven, you better be very good with your execution. The other thing was Nebraska's offensive line wasn't very physical. We talked this morning from one of our weekly hosts that we like to have on out in the 308 there in Grand Island, Aaron Sim, and we were just talking about how inexplicably Nebraska's lack of physicality up front was kind of a mind number. You would literally see guys from Michigan State take running starts at their run fit, and Nebraska continually would catch Michigan State defenders. It's very hard to establish any sort of line of scrimmage presence or domination up front when you're spending the good majority of your time catching defensive players instead of delivering blows. Now, could that have been helped with the familiar banter and the narrative of, well, where were the screens and where were the draws? And I'll tell you a couple things about that. Number one, if Nebraska has a little bit more success early on with some decision-making in the zone read game, I think that could have alleviated a lot of pressure on the offensive line. When you're only in 10 or 11 personnel, you know, one back, one tight end, or one back, no tight end, and your dual-threat quarterback ceases to be a dual threat, you are very limited in the run game if you're Coach Beck and you don't choose to go to Plan B. What Plan B could have been were things that I don't think were out of the ordinary in what they've shown in the past. They got G scheme where they can pull guard. You can put another back in the backfield and go I formation, which they've shown flashes of. Or you can run power and counter out of your quarterback run game, which is still in the confines of your offense. I don't think it's too far-fetched to think that that was something you could go to help buoy what seemed to be some inexplicable lack of toughness going on up front to bail your guys out. Now, if you're a Tim Beck apologist, or maybe you want to offer, and maybe apologist is too hard of a word, if you want to maybe describe why they maybe didn't go to that, I know sometimes as a coordinator and a coach, you can become easily defeated when you feel you can't block people. We heard Coach Pelini allude to it in the post game. Well, it doesn't really matter what you call when you can't handle people up front. To some degree, that's true. But I do believe there are companion or pet plays that you can go to in your offensive run game that could help alleviate the way that Michigan State liked to play downhill, and that's primarily with either another back in the backfield or go misdirection and counter.
Yeah, another question. You know, we did have some injuries to some of the key guys that could not come back and play, you know. And I think maybe that had something to do with maybe in the second quarter. You know, we were kind of in a mold there. We're going, hey, let's just don't turn the ball over here. You know, let's punt. Let's do what we got to do, and let's kind of regroup at halftime. We're going to have to make some changes here. I know some of these guys play, but some of our playmakers were coming out of the game. Another comment, but I think you made a great call about the zone read. I think we made some really bad decisions on the zone read. We were giving the ball to Abdullah when he should not have been getting the ball, and that was a real key. You know, when we talk about throwing to the wrong receiver, that's kind of the same thing with the zone read. So I think that was a great point you made, because I kind of felt that, and after you said it, I really agree with you 100%.
Yeah, I'm telling you, and you know what it does? It's because remember what the narrative was after that was, gosh, you know, the middle of the field is so open, and, you know, where's our tight end game, and where's the intermediate passing routes? And while all that's true, within the context of Nebraska's offense, their ability to control safeties is with quarterback run game. If you force a team to play 11-on-11, which is what quarterback run game does, you no longer have threes and strong safeties. There is no free, because he's not free. He has to account for your quarterback. So without that dimension, you essentially are allowing two extra run fitters to play in your run game. Now, the narrative that says the middle of the field was open all night, where's your tight end or intermediate passing game? That's true, too. But then you got to take a look at Nebraska's personnel. No Seaton Carter. Cotton had a little bit of a case of the dropsies, was struggling to get off of jam coverage at the line of scrimmage. I think Nebraska shied away from controlling the hashes. If that's the case, then you've got to go back to old reliable. Okay, what do we hang our hat on? What are we as an offense? And for Nebraska, if you've got a dual threat quarterback in the game like Tommy Armstrong is, you better put the dual in dual threat. Otherwise, you're going to allow defenses to not keep you honest.
Damon Benning with us for another couple of minutes here on the Doug and Daddy Show, former Husker and host of Sharp and Benning in the Morning in Omaha. And, of course, the first touchdown, I believe it was the first touchdown, Daniel Davey gets hurt. They go deep right at where his replacement was, and they get the seven. Got a couple questions that have rolled in here on our Dent Popper inbox. This comes from Mark. He says, can you ask Damon, it seemed like Michigan State knew where we were going on checks at the line of scrimmage. Do we need to change that up, or were they just good guessers?
Yeah, I tell you what, I'm speculating, but it looked like, and I've watched this a couple of times, there are certain things that Nebraska would do, and all of a sudden, Michigan State would go crazy.
Yeah.
Right, guys would start talking to one another, and they would bounce the calls. To me, the naked eye leads me to believe that Michigan State knew what Nebraska was doing. Now, that being said, I think it still, for me, boils down to execution. Again, and I'll keep hammering this until Nebraska does something different with it. When you're in one back run game and there's emphasis on the one back, your only other option in the run game is with your quarterback. So if it's truly zone read and you want to slow Michigan State down, if they do know what you're doing, you still have to force them to be disciplined. I think at the end of the day, while Michigan State may have been privy to Nebraska's tendencies, the lack of a dual threat out of the backfield allowed Michigan State to play downhill. I did a couple of screenshots on Twitter. I actually took them off of television where Nebraska would run outside zone or stretch. And before the ball was even handed off to Amir Abdullah, to see Michigan State's flow and lack of honoring wide receivers in the slot was mind-boggling. Mm-hmm. Any number eight action immediately got 18 eyes in the backfield. Corners did their job. They're pass players first. But for the rest of those nine guys out there on the field, they did a good job of locating number eight. We definitely didn't do him any favors by design, whether Michigan State knew what was going on or not.
As always happens after a loss, it's a lot of negative talk and then trying to fix what didn't go right. There were obviously positives in this football game, and Trevor Roach, May, and Pearson L have to be two of the brightest spots from Saturday night's game.
Absolutely. Trevor Roach with 18 tackles. Now, the one thing that you're going to get with Trevor Roach, and I wasn't one of those guys that was necessarily all in after the Miami game, even though he made the couple of splash plays, because throughout the course of the whole game, I thought he would grade out about a 6 or a 7, not quite a 10 like the splash plays would indicate. So that led me to believe, okay, he's still continuing to get better. But the one thing he will get with Trevor Roach is if it's a four-quarter football game, rest assured this guy's going to play four quarters. And the way that that game kind of evolved, that one wasn't about being tactical for a good majority of the game. That game was about toughness. And if that guy, known as Trevor Roach, is going to continue to play with toughness, then we better hop on that guy's back. Because being tough is contagious. He can make it uncomfortable for other guys that don't play with his same amount of tempo. And he's a guy who I think Nebraska's got to hop on his back. I felt like defensively as a whole, you take out the well-done design of Michigan State to pick on a newbie in the game. By newbie, I don't mean the namesake. Newbie, by mean Jonathan Rose is the new guy in the game. The leaky run on the bad run fit by Gary. Malik Collins getting blown up on inside run. And the long run by Langford. And in the reverse, Nebraska defensively was good enough to win that game. If you tell me that Langford can go 29 for 110 and Connor Cook can go 11 of 29 with an interception, and that game was as out of control as it was for 2.5 quarters, I'd have told you you're crazy. If you're looking for positives, hang your hat on two little hidden things. Number one, Nebraska able to generate pressure and push and stop run game with their front four. And then two, your superstar, your bell cow, your most talented defensive player in Randy Gregory played with some hustle. He got away from just making splash plays and playing well every four or five plays to a guy that showed he had some tendency to have a little yard dog in him. He ran plays down from the backside. He played through cut blocks. He chased guys from sideline to sideline. He showed a different effort level. And then if you're in Nebraska secondary, a lot of 50-50 balls. You didn't get a lot of guys running wide open. So if you want some positives, the front four was great. Your back end knows that when you go to practice this week during bye weeks, continue to not let guys be content with just catching balls on the offense. If there's a completion, get in there. Strip at the ball. Rake at it. Make it uncomfortable for guys that like to make body catches like Michigan State does. Make it uncomfortable to make those kinds of catches. You got to fight and battle till you rip that thing out of there. There's plenty of good that what happened on the defensive side if you're a fan of the University of Nebraska.
Yeah, Damon, one point real quick, and I'm not 100% sold on this, but I'm sold on it pretty good because I did coach and played the game. And that is the fact that the weather had a little bit to help both defenses. I mean, with the weather the way it was, they could cheat up a little bit and do some things and sell out a little bit more, and it made it a little more difficult for the offense. Your thoughts on that?
Hey, no question. And, I'm glad you said it, and I'm going to lean on the fact that I'm just in agreement with you because sometimes it comes across as sour grapes or being kind of whiny when you talk about weather. But I couldn't agree with you more. And primarily because in the run game, when you're a zone team, or you're a guy like Langford, or you're a guy like Abdullah, when you're a plant and push guy, when you're used to putting that foot in the dirt and getting vertical right away, there's some hesitancy and some tendency as a runner to stick your foot in the ground because you don't really like what's going on that surface. I thought it affected Amir more than it affected Langford, but you're absolutely correct in terms of how I think the surface help dictate the flow of that game.
Last comment I will give you, Damon, and let you out of here. Tommy Armstrong says we want to see him again in Indianapolis. I didn't pick Nebraska to win the West because of the schedule. I feel, even after the loss, a little bit better about Nebraska making it to Indianapolis than I did on Friday. Where are you at with the team as of today?
Well, I like Nebraska. I thought that they'd win the West in a tiebreaker. I thought everybody would have one loss and Nebraska would win a tiebreaker. Now, having said that, I'm okay with the visionary thought of going 11-1, but if you're at the University of Nebraska and you're in that locker room and you're part of that staff, understand one thing, and make no mistake about it. Every game from here on out is a mental makeup kind of game. That means that whomever you're playing as an opponent, while physically you may be equal to or greater than, you better understand that it's going to be your mindset that's going to get you to 11-1 and not your physical talent. Because if it's Northwestern, if it's Iowa, if it's Minnesota, if it's Wisconsin, if it's Rutgers, physically you're better than every last one of those teams. You've left yourself very little wiggle room with regards to that 11-1 mantra. You better bring your best from a mindset in terms of mental preparation when you step out on that field, because physically you'll have no excuses.
Damon, always great to catch up with you. I knew you'd bring it strong today, and we will let you rest because it's been a long morning of radio talk. So can't wait to see you at the next home game.
Hey, I enjoy what you guys do. Anytime you need me, you know I'm a fan.
Hey, thanks, buddy. Enjoy it. Take care. Damon Benning joining us here on the Doug and Daddy Show. Benning and Schaub of the Morning, 1620 in Omaha. Catch him online if you want to as well. He also gives them the breakdown for their afternoon segment. Former MVP of the Orange Bowl for the Huskers. And just he loves that part of it and can give you that inside info here in the Midway Auto Dealership broadcast booth. Before we go to break, Matt Schick's going to join us, talk about the broader perspective of just, I chuckled this morning when I saw Mississippi and Mississippi State tied for third. How good is the SEC? You know, you root for them. They're underdogs. They haven't been there. Good for them. This comes from John, who says, ask Jimmy, was the fair catch signal legit, or was it a poor call that could have also changed the game? They're talking about Pearsonell waving people away on a short punt, picked it up, started to advance it. It looked like there was a hole there because he had already progressed when the whistle started to blow. And you have an explanation.
Well, I think he gave the getaway yep. signal. And I know if you make a fair catch and you catch the ball and you run it, it's delay a game. I believe the getaway signal is that you're telling everybody to get away from the ball. And if you're the one giving the signal and you get the ball and then you try to advance it, I think it's dead right there. That's got to be an NCAA rule. I haven't worked NCAA for a while, but, you know, I did text a guy that worked one of the Nebraska football games this year. I text him. We haven't got anything back from him. So for me to say 100% sure, I don't know. But I will tell you this. There were eight officials out there, and nobody seemed to challenge that.
Yeah.
No coach. Nobody came out. And real quickly, somebody and they have those NCAA officials up there with them, and real quickly said, hey, when you get the getaway signal, you just can't advance it. It's really not a penalty. It's just that you can't advance the ball, and it's dead right there.
So it was the right call. There's your answer. We'll take a break. Matt Schick, ESPNU, when we come back.
I had never even owned a furnace or an air conditioner before, so it was brand new to me, and they trained me, not just by sending me out with them, but also I have those resources to talk to people. I like to think that when I show up to a house, it's not just me with my 5 years of experience showing up there, but it's all the years of experience of all the Texas Anderson Brothers showing up at that house as resources that I can use. Without the training from Anderson Brothers, I would not be able to do the work that I do today.
Regardless of age or experience, start a new career with a call to Anderson Brothers Electric Plumbing and Heating in Kearney and Holdridge.
Hi, this is Michelle Henke, Executive Director of the United Way of South Central Nebraska, and I invite you to get connected. In an effort to increase connections and relationships between local agencies and community members, the United Way of South Central Nebraska offers an online system called Get Connected. You simply log on to UnitedWaySCNE.org to start your journey. Get Connected is an amazing tool for finding resources, events, and volunteer opportunities. For details, call us at 402-461-8412.
Hi, Sean Callahan here. I'm excited to tell you about a company I'm working with that will finally bring you the internet experience you've been waiting for. I'm talking about a company that is so reliable, so dependable, and has such amazing local customer service that you'll be wondering why people haven't done business like this before. Prairie iNet Fixed Wireless Internet will change the way you experience your world. Let's talk about their amazing technology. They have the largest fixed wireless network in the U.S., and because of this, they can pass their savings on to you. That means finally having reliable internet at a price you can afford. Another perk, no contracts. With Prairie iNet, you won't sign a contract ever. I personally met the people at Prairie iNet. You can trust that you'll be getting a better internet experience, and more importantly, you can trust them. Mention my name, Sean Callahan, and you'll get a $100 Visa gift card and free installation for just signing up. Call Prairie iNet right now at 308-221-7844. That's 308-221-7844.
To some, winning isn't everything, it's the only thing. Others say it's not whether you win or lose, it's how you play the game. But everyone can agree that the uniforms and equipment you play in make a big difference in how you play and how you win. That's why TM Sporting Goods gives you that winning edge with top name brands and personal service from seasoned pros like Steve Baradol and Tino Martinez. TM Sporting Goods, on the bricks, 2217 Central, downtown Kearney. TM Sporting Goods, a Division Pro Team Design.
Doug and Daddy's show. Doug Duda, Jim Langan with you on this Monday, rolling along here on ESPN Radio. Time for our Midtown Mart cooler question. Midtown Mart of Hastings, home of the coldest beer and coolest topics. We asked you who you had for the National League pennant going to the World Series. 40% over the weekend took the Nationals. Not looking so good. 30% the Giants, with the Cardinals and Dodgers farther back, which I can't believe. I think I took the Dodgers. Jimmy, did you take the Dodgers? We both took the Dodgers. Here's our Midtown Mark cooler question today. Which college football upset was the most surprising in the last week? And there were many of them. We gave you four. There's others like Utah over UCLA, Arizona State over USC, Northwestern beating Wisconsin, Utah State over BYU. The four we're giving you is Arizona over Oregon, Mississippi over Alabama, TCU over Oklahoma, Mississippi State over Texas A&M. No doubt which one of those I'm picking, Jimmy. I'm taking Arizona because I took TCU on the show and you were loving Mississippi. So are you on the same, or do you take TCU or somebody else?
Well, if we're throwing out Thursday night's game, are you having that in there? Yeah. I think that was the biggest upset, going into Oregon and winning. They were a 24-point dog. Everybody else was about 10 or under. Except Arizona State, who Arizona State almost beat UCLA, if people are honest about it. They played the week before on a Thursday, and it just snowballed on a couple turnovers, and it got ugly quick. And those are things you need to watch when you're looking at that, because what happened the next week? Arizona State wins, UCLA loses.
Crazy stuff out there. You can vote on our Midtown Mark cooler question at ESPNSuperstation.com. And we welcome back to the program Matt Schick, who is at ESPNU. He's worked us in between his Monday meetings. Matt, good morning. How are you, buddy?
I'm doing very well. It's a beautiful day in Charlotte, North Carolina. It is a little before the 1 o'clock hour. We are very excited to be on the aforementioned Doug and Matt show.
I think we're going to go back to that too. Which one did you? What's your pick? What was the biggest upset of the weekend?
Yeah, probably Arizona. I think that was kind of the one that was the harbinger of things to come, so to speak. Yeah, more than a 3-touchdown underdog, although I think everything's easier to look at in hindsight. I felt Oregon was one of the more vulnerable teams in the top five just because of their injuries in the offensive line. Then they lose Armstead on the D-line during the game. But that was surprising to just see that offense and Mariota just not play very well. The other ones were impressive. It's hard to be terribly surprised when home teams win, especially in that tough SEC West. So, although I didn't think Ole Miss would win, it still shouldn't be a huge shocker considering where they were playing and, frankly, how good that defense is.
You either love the SEC, or if you're not in the SEC, then you kind of hate it. I don't even think there's any middle ground with this. But could the SEC be down? Anytime you see a rollover like this, you go, well, are they down? And Mississippi and Mississippi State just happen to be a little bit better than the average bear this year? Or is the SEC still, I mean, it's still the conference, but could their overall level be down? What's everybody there at ESPN you think?
No, I think the perception is it might be at least the SEC West. We'll say that. I've heard this said, it's the best division in the history of college football. And wow. to say it's down, I don't think would be accurate, although I will say that I think there are programs that are taking advantage of the fact that there was a lot of turnover at the quarterback position in the SEC. I think there were 8 or 9 teams that had to replace their predominant starting quarterback from a season ago. Look at what's happened at Alabama. Look at what's happened at LSU. And then on the flip side, look at Ole Miss with Bo Wallace. He's not great, but he's a returning starter. Had some of the most experienced. Dak Prescott, Mississippi State, returning starter, knows everything, knows how to get it done, and is a playmaker. So, and Texas A&M, they lose Johnny Manziel, bring in Kenny Hill, and I think the verdict is still out on how good he is. I think everyone is ready to stamp him for the College Football Hall of Fame. He's getting a he's getting a new nickname. He's trademarking it, following in Manziel's footsteps after a win over a South Carolina team that has now lost three games. So I think there is that narrative out there, which is accurate, that it's a strong conference. The SEC West is very strong. And unfortunately for the rest of college football, these teams that are beating each other up, they're all in the top 15 and top 20. These aren't teams that are top 10, top 15, and then losing to teams that are either unranked or outside the top 15. So I don't think this league or the SEC West is going anywhere.
Hey, Jim Langan here. You know, I got a couple comments, and I'm a co-host, so I'm not very good at just going with one thing. I ask you like nine questions. There's no way you can remember them all.
Nobody ever has been in that chair.
No, but I mean, by the sound of your voice, you're already a step ahead of Doug, and you just have a better frame of reference, and I've only just known you for 8 seconds.
So there you go. Hey, good point. Hey, Alabama has lost three games in like out of their last seven. You know, they lost to Oklahoma, Auburn, and Mississippi. I don't think Alabama is quite what they were, you know, as far as dominating that conference. And not only that, when they got beat, you know, the Auburn game, you know, was kind of a tough, you know, 50-50 call. But when they got beat by Oklahoma, I mean, they got thumped. And they have not been beating other people. You know, they beat West Virginia by 10. You know, they struggled a little bit. So in the last 10 games, they've struggled to some degree. So I don't think Alabama is as dominant. So a win over Alabama, it seems nice, but it's not even as good as maybe some of the other wins in the Southeastern Conference. The other thing is, what a great year to have four teams in the playoffs.
Yeah.
I mean, having four teams in the playoffs is really critical, I think, this year. It is amazing. And what a thank God we have four. Mississippi and Mississippi State are going to be playing again later on. They're going to make a decision. You know, they're going to play head-to-head. One of those teams, even if they both have a loss, they can both have one loss. They still can get in that thing. One of them's going to get in. Your thoughts on Alabama a little bit, and then also about Mississippi State.
Well, I think with Alabama, I think a lot of it, too, is when you've won three of the last five national championships, you've earned some respect. And so they've got it. But, yeah, the last few teams they've played very good teams last few times. They've lost. And if you look at some of the common denominators, I mean, look what happened against Auburn last year. Just turnovers, stupid special teams mistakes, and the same thing happened against Mississippi State. And so it's puzzling. I mean, that's a team that was, what were they, up 14-3 on Ole Miss, and they wind up losing that game. They're obviously vulnerable. Now look at the teams that they lost to as well. I mean, Oklahoma last year, maybe they weren't perceived that great, but there's a reason that they were perceived as a top five, top ten team this year. They're pretty good. Auburn should have beaten Florida State in the national championship. That came down to a late play. And frankly, Alabama was right in there. So I guess the difference would be that they're not getting blown out. But yeah, this isn't the same Alabama team that we said. I think it speaks to the parity that we see throughout college football. And when you play in the SEC and you play in the SEC West specifically, you're not going to win every game. And that's why there's a high likelihood that the winner of the Southeastern Conference is going to have at least one loss, could have two losses. And that's going to be very interesting to see what the College Football Playoff Selection Committee does coming up this year. And as far as Mississippi State, I think it's the same thing with the SEC West. I think Mississippi State, they've got Auburn this week. I mean, if you play in that division, you just have a gauntlet. Look at what Auburn is going to have to do. They go to Mississippi State. They're going to go to Ole Miss. They're going to go to Alabama. And they're going to go to Georgia. You can have Auburn, which arguably is the best team in college football. If I had to pick one, I'd pick Auburn. I'd probably be wrong. But I'd pick Auburn, and they could wind up with two losses. So the selection committee is going to have a tough time narrowing down the four teams, because you're going to have is a two-loss SEC champ better than a one-loss Big Ten champ or one-loss Big 12 champ? I mean, those are the things that they're going to have to sort out. I think we know the winner of the SEC conference is going to get into the college football playoff, unless, and this is the other thing, unless some weird thing happens in the SEC East, a team pops up there like a Missouri,
and somehow gets in there and gets the win, then who knows what's going to happen. So we got a lot of people that want to make these, here's my final four, here are the four teams that are in, when in reality it should just be blank, and it should be blank until about mid to late November, because it almost seems foolish to have a final four right now that includes TCU, Ole Miss, Mississippi State, and Florida State, because we could wake up Sunday morning and it could be completely reversed, and then you wind up just chasing your own tail and running in circles and trying to keep up with this thing. It's hard to do.
And it gets you tired, too. Matt Schick with us just for just another couple minutes, because he's got to run off to a meeting with his agent. He's going to tell us a little bit here. Of course, also coming off a huge win for the Buffalo Bills yesterday and a 58-yard field goal. We don't want to overlook that. But you're right, Matt. A lot of the talk is SEC. Not a lot of people are sold on Florida State. Probably should have lost a game by now. And then you're looking Baylor, Notre Dame, and right there's Michigan State of the non-SEC teams that have a chance to make the playoffs. My money's still on Georgia in the SEC, by the way. But what's the feeling around the office there? Let's put Florida State off to the side. These other teams, is Baylor better than Notre Dame? Notre Dame struggled against Stanford. I mean, is there somebody sitting back there is Arizona good enough? Georgia Tech's undefeated. Nobody's going to give them any love. Is there somebody that is ready to make a move, not going to lose another game?
No, I don't think so. I think the narrative on Arizona is that they're a top 10 team because they've deserved it, maybe not necessarily because they are, although they could prove us wrong coming up this week. I think they got USC, but then again, how good is USC?
Yeah.
It's funny, the Pac-12, the two division leaders now are Arizona and Cal. I mean, I think that tells you all you need to know about not only that conference, but what's going on in college football. I think teams outside the consensus top four, I don't think people are buying Notre Dame, and I think what happened 2 years ago is a big reason why. You look at 2 years ago, this Notre Dame team looks very similar. It also, you know, walked through its cake, you know, early part of the season, went over Michigan. Michigan isn't very good. Went over Purdue, not very good. And then they beat a Stanford team squeakily at the end, just like they did 2 years ago. And so I think people find it hard to separate this Notre Dame team in 2014 with what happened in 2012, and we know how that team ended, and we know that that team was not the second-best team in the country. I think other teams out there that could be there, I think it was way too premature for the Big Ten to be declared dead when Ohio State lost to Virginia Tech and when Michigan State lost to Oregon. In a lot of ways, I thought it was irresponsible to say the Big Ten is dead, because look at what happened. Now you've got two Big Ten teams in the top 15 in Ohio State and Michigan State. If Michigan State runs the table, wins the Big Ten Conference, it's going to be very difficult for the selection committee to not take them as one of the best, also because of what they did last year. So a lot's left to be decided, but I think it's all out there for a lot of teams. I would argue that the Big Ten has a better chance of getting into the playoff than the Pac-12. And I only say that because after what happened last week to the Pac-12, Stanford, UCLA, USC, Oregon all losing, their margin for error continues to become almost as slim as the Big Ten. You can only have so many losses from your best teams before your conference becomes very looked over. And so that's going to be interesting to see as well. If you're a Big Ten fan, you want to see Michigan State or Ohio State in there, just root for the Pac-12 to continue to beat up on each other and their best teams continue to lose, and maybe you'll be there.
No, we're going to root for Nebraska. So that's what's – and again, and again, Michigan State, one loss. Oregon, one loss. We know what the loss was to. Michigan State's four slots ahead of Oregon in the poll this week. Go figure. We'll let you out of here with this, Matt Schick. I can't keep up with the defensive coordinators of every Division I school in the country. So is Cosgrove at California or Washington State? I can't remember.
I don't know. Where is he? Isn't he at a high school? Where is he?
It's not a very good high school, I'm guessing.
I don't know. He must have been. You throw up 1,300 yards of offense combined. He was probably there somewhere, maybe giving some advice a week of. Probably Cal's defense, considering how Halliday did. at quarterback. I don't know how you pass for 740 yards and lose, but Mike Leach was able to have his quarterback do that. That's very, very impressive.
It takes some work. Matt Schick, ESPNU, who I'm sure in the very near future will be talking with new analyst Charlie Weiss, sitting right next to him there in Charlottesville. Schick, I know you got stuff to do, man. It's been too long. Hopefully your Thanksgiving coming up will be a joyous one. I know you're getting ready to take the kids to the pumpkin patch for Halloween, so enjoy a couple days off.
Thank you. We're looking forward to the days of turducken and mashed potatoes and cranberry sauce and creamy green beans, all the things that Billy C. used to love.
It's so good.
As Thanksgiving approached. Anytime you want me on, I'm here. I'll be here. Good to talk to you guys.
All right. The 4-1 Dallas Cowboys, by the way. See you, Schick.
Yeah, go Bill.
Matt Schick joining us here on the Doug and Daddy Show. Again, that's why you have four-hour talk shows, each 3-4-hour talk shows nationally here, Jimmy. You look at these rankings and you go, "What?" If you had a Final Four today, it can't be Florida State, Auburn, Mississippi, Mississippi State. It can't be, can it? We all know it plays itself out. And then you go, well, why is Michigan State rated ahead of Oregon? Why? They're both 4-1. Oregon beat Michigan State. Why would they be rated ahead of them? That's what's wacky.
Yeah, road game, and things change. If you're really honest about this, it's what you did last week so often. You know, people are going to forget about Baylor and TCU. I mean, try to look back, and Doug, I'm older than you, but if you look back in the 1970s, you'd have never dreamed that TCU would be playing for anything like this. But, you know, I think it was just 3 or 4 years ago TCU was 11-1, 12-1, something like this. TCU's for real. The TCU is for real, and we all know Baylor is. So you got TCU and Baylor. You got Mississippi and Mississippi State. They're for real. This isn't a luck deal. This isn't something where they just got a bad schedule. Hey, I agree with Matt on Notre Dame. Notre Dame's beaten some poor teams and had to win at the end of the game. But at Mississippi State, you look at Mississippi State, what did they do? They go into LSU, and they win big time. Texas A&M comes in, they win. This didn't go down to a Hail Mary pass. You know, hey, we had plenty of Hail Marys.
Woohoo, Arizona State.
Yeah, and Arizona.
And against USC, that's just like a double.
Well, Arizona beats Oregon 2 years in a row. I mean, this isn't just something that, hey, somebody lucked out on. I could give you some lucky people, but these people have gone on the road and won some football games. I mean, I'll tell you what, these 5 teams can play. And I'll tell you what, and whether people want to hear it or not, Florida State and Auburn are going to be involved in this thing. If they could have Florida State can't lose one game. Florida State's got to run the table.
Now.
But Auburn can lose a game. Mississippi and Mississippi State can lose one game. I don't think TCU and Baylor can lose a game. They might be able to. But I don't think they can lose one game and get in the thing. But
not feel good about it.
Yeah, but
they need a lot of stuff.
But I guarantee you, if TCU and Baylor, because they play each other, I think this week, and the winner of that game, if they run the table, and they're not in that thing, I'd be really disappointed for them.
You've been talking about all these Texas teams that are good, have been getting good, and you threw me out all kinds of like TCU's, and you know, and I got confused. Did you say SMU?
I definitely did not say SMU, but they definitely covered the other day. They scored 24 points and looked pretty good.
They scored
The thing of it is, you got to remember, I just threw it out kind of for fun because of the other one. But SMU, if you look at their schedule, they played A&M, Baylor, and TCU 3 of their first 4 games. No matter who they play.
Not
next, we're moving the ball. Hey, we got a first down, and you know, so yeah, no kidding.
Jimmy officially went 2-3-1, did not go 6-0 this weekend, but at the season 16-18-1, still the last month a winner, and we're going to be moving forward. You came very close on your NFL teaser when you went all State of New York Bills winner straight out, Giants winner straight out. The Jets looked horrific. And, of course, on my contest that I'm in, the only one of those three I took, the Jets, so sorry about that. I'm going to go 0-5 this weekend unless the Seahawks cover tonight, so put that one on your pipe. And for the college, Nebraska, winner, Arizona State, winner. Nevada ended up being a push, and then the losers were Stanford, obviously East Carolina against SMU, and Maryland. Wow. Ohio State, that's why I said we got to get them out of the way in a hurry. In our pigskin pick'em, a lot of upsets. You don't expect it to go well, but hey, $50 will be in the Cunningham's cash vault for our next contestant on Friday. Once again, 500 was good enough, but 500 rolled everybody else in the contest. I happen to be the one that went 5-5 because I did pick TCU to upset Oklahoma. I did pick Ole Miss to beat Alabama. Conversely, though, I had A&M against Mississippi State. My bad one was LSU against Auburn. We all missed on Miami of Florida over Georgia Tech, and we all missed on Michigan. Rutgers game also picked up a couple other wins in there. So Keith went, the caller had four wins. Jimmy, only three. You kind of stayed with some chalk this week because you said you didn't have any great feelings. I went 5-5. Bottom line is we win, caller loses. And we are now putting $50 up in the Cunningham's cash vault. We need to take a break here on the Doug and Daddy Show. But don't forget, as you're headed out to lunch on this Monday, a lot of places say they're sports bar and grills, but no one combines the best of both places like the Cardi Chicken Coop. And thanks to them, Monday doesn't have to be a downer anymore. The Chicken Coop has a lunch special from 11 to 4 of their steak sandwich, your choice of side, $7.49 every Monday. And of course, from 2 to 5:30, appetizer specials, 2 1/4. Long necks and draws, 2 1/4. Getting you ready for Monday Night Football. Baseball starts just after 4 o'clock, so you're in for happy hour. Enjoy some great sports. Enjoy your favorite beverages. Enjoy your favorite food. And the lunch special every Monday, the steak sandwich and your choice of side, $7.49. It's Kearney's Chicken Coop, Bar and Grill, the best of both worlds, downtown Kearney.
All sports, one source, two stations, KICS Hastings, KXPN Kearney, Central Nebraska's ESPN Radio Superstation.
I don't know if I can take another drought, Phil.
Well, Dave, I've been a channel seedsman for a while, seen a lot of tough conditions and even tougher farmers.
Conversations like this are happening in channel cornfields across America.
Hey, how about that? Corn's staying green.
You know what? They're doing a whole lot more than that.
At Channel, we don't have salesmen. We have Channel Seedsman, a trusted advisor who works with you to provide the right recommendation for your fields. Like Channel brand Genuity Drought Guard Hybrids. During challenging drought conditions, Drought Guard Hybrids adapt to drought stress and conserve soil moisture using available water more efficiently until the next rain.
That's hydro efficiency, right?
Right, and that means a better chance for yield at harvest.
Always read and follow IRM, grain marketing, and all other stewardship practices and pesticide label directions. Individual results may vary.
For year-round customized service and solutions, your local channel seedsmen are Jeff Westberg, Crops Unlimited, Shane Benfelt, and Adam Axtell. Or find one at channel.com.
If your company or farm is accepting bids on replacing your roofing system, call the company that provides the best products, the best workmanship, and the best service after the job is completed. Lampman Roofing Company. Your project is not handed off to some subcontractor. Eddie Lampman is personally on every job assuring you that your project is always the top quality that you expect. Lampman's spray-on weather and waterproofing systems make your roof look and work like brand new for many years to come for a lot less money. Farmers enjoy Lampman systems that seal leaky grain bin walls and roofs. For a free, no-pressure quote, call 800-942-4331 or 402-670-9167. Saving you on your re-roofing and energy, Lampman Roofing Company. 800-942-4331 for your quote. An A-plus rated Better Business Partner.
Family Physical Therapy and Sports Center, getting you back in the game of life. With two locations in Kearney, the Ortho Clinic at the Kearney Clinic and the Rehab Clinic at the ENT Building. Family Physical Therapy and Sports Center, excellence in rehabilitation. A very proud supporter of the area athletes in and out of the game. Locations serving Kearney, Lexington, Minden, Ravenna, and Wood River. Family Physical Therapy and Sports Center.
Show, Central Nebraska's ESPN Radio Superstation. Glad to have you along with us. Doug Duda, Jim Langan, wrapping up a Friday, mostly Husker talk and Division I football talk. We'll talk with coaches Daryl Morris and Tony Harper tomorrow. A lot of points scored by Hastings College, and their win over Briarcliff, number one Morningside coming in. And UNK, that's a tough one. That was probably the worst they played all year, and you hate to have that happen, but that will be bouncing into a chance to win this Saturday. They go to Northeastern State. Both teams are 0-5. Somebody gets a win. Somebody gets a chance to have a little momentum, a little something positive going into the second half of the season. Nebraska volleyball, they play very well for most of the match against Penn State and win it, but then they give it right back. So the picture is it didn't matter. You could have lost to Penn State. You beat Ohio State. You went 1-1 in the conference. That's kind of what John Cook was saying. It's nice to know that you can beat a team the caliber of Penn State, but when you get to the postseason, which is what he always talks about, you got to be able to do that on back-to-back nights. And Ohio State down 14-11 in the fifth, scored five straight, beat the Huskers 16-14, and made all the fans late for the football game. UNK 1-1 volleyball over the weekend. They don't have Central Missouri's number right now, but they come home. Hastings College sweeps Mount Marty. They're home against 10th-ranked Midland on Wednesday. Soccer, Hastings sweeps Dakota Wesleyan, and UNK drops a pair. Tri-City Storm fell 5-3 in their home opener Friday, bounced back with a shootout win over Des Moines Saturday. They're home against Chicago this Friday and Saturday. And one more time, congratulations to all the folks that went into the Nebraska High School Sports Hall of Fame yesterday in Lincoln, especially those from our area. If you're thinking about a new Pivot irrigation system, don't miss out on T&L Irrigation's Harvest Special $5 per foot discount. It's just for a limited time, and you can save $6,500 when buying a quarter-mile-long T&L pivot, guaranteeing you decades of reliability with your hydrostatic T&L irrigation system. Find out more from your T&L dealer or go online at TLIRR.com. It's T&L's Harvest Special $5 per foot discount, saving you up to $6,500 on a quarter-mile-long T&L pivot system. Jimmy, I think we covered everything. Have we covered everything? Any last thoughts? I guess it's all about not tripping up in the next month. Nebraska needs to get to 8-1, take care of business, and then they go to Wisconsin, host Minnesota at Iowa. So we've got a bye week, then Rutgers and Purdue come in back-to-back weeks. Then you get that bye week for the home stretch in November. Just don't stub your toe. Get to 8-1. Try and shore some things up with that offensive line. Don't get anybody hurt. And try and be 8-1 when you get ready for Wisconsin on November 15th.
Yeah, I think the one thing is with the Big Ten is all these teams have about the same chance, Doug. I mean, we're looking at Nebraska thinking, got to do this, got to do that. I was looking at the same thing. I was looking at this thing, and hey, we've got a chance. Wisconsin's thinking we've got a chance. Even though, you know, they got the loss to Northwestern's opened the door to them. There are so many teams here that have an opportunity to make a move here. But the thing that it is, Doug, if we're honest about this, how good are these teams in the nation? You know, we're talking about Iowa, Wisconsin, Northwestern, Nebraska. Do you think, are they getting a lot of publicity about, boy, we're scared to death to play these guys? You know, I mean, they're just average football teams, but somebody's going to win this thing. Somebody's going to win this thing and going to play in the Big Ten Championship. Might as well be us.
Just will be Nebraska. And again, I love all of the Facebooks and emails and tweets about how bad Dallas is. Keep it coming, people. They're 4-1. Yeah. Feel that. Yeah. Ha ha. Feel that. By the way, Kevin Cosgrove, we've located him. He's now at New Mexico. And in the first five games, they've given up 31, 58, 35, 35. And then they beat Texas San Antonio 21-9 this week. So they are 2-3 at New Mexico. And he gave up 35 points to Fresno State. Yes, he personally did. Hey, we want to thank Matt Schick of ESPNU, Damon Benning, former Husker and host of Sharp and Benning in the Morning, for joining us on the program today. Tony Harper, Daryl Morris among our guests tomorrow. Jimmy, great to have you in as always. Thanks for the insight. Great show.
Talk to you later, Doug.
See you, boys. See you, girls. See you, folks. Listen to the Doug and Daddy Show. If you missed any of it, go to our podcast at ESPNSuperstation.com.
You've been listening to a Doug and Daddy podcast brought to you by Cunningham's Journal. Cunningham's Journal, the only bar you need to know in Kearney.
Oh, darling, I feel like amazing.
Don't make me do that again.
Game over.